Okay, ready? Before lunch or before the discussion? Thanks to Diego. Where's Diego for all of the... Did he just leave? Oh, I didn't notice. Well, I'll tell him thank you in a moment. I'll get going with this. Let's see. So first, I'd like to acknowledge that the paper today draws from three different yet interrelated multi-species ethnographic inquiries of children's relations with water, weather, and waste that all take place across Whadjuk Boodjar, which is also known as Perth in Western Australia. Whadjuk Boodjar is beautiful and holds many significant memories for the Noongar Whadjuk people, who are the traditional custodians of this land. I'd also like to acknowledge that the ideas and experimentations that I present today build on years of grappling with theories and methods that interfere with developmentalism, human exceptionalism, and settler colonial logics. But this grappling has not been done alone. My thinking is never done alone. I think with several members of the Common Worlds Research Collective who are here today, which I co-founded with Veronica Pacini-Ketchabau and Afrika Taylor. And here's the website, and Veronica also showed another bit of the website. If you go under the Conversations tab and underneath Conversations, that will lead you to the page that Veronica showed around the Climate Action Network. So my projects are all related to that Climate Action Network, and you can find out more information about what we're doing with children's relations with water, waste, and weather. And my colleagues Jane Merriweather and Joe Pollitt are unable to be here today, but they are collaborators, co-thinkers, and co-writers with this paper. Now, feminist scholars' critiques of the Anthropocene shed light on the necessity to generate new ways of thinking and doing to respond differently to the unique qualities of our contemporary world. Inspired by Afrika Taylor's feminist and intentional research practices of slowing down, scaling down, and paying attention to what is already happening in children's common worlds, we use these as a starting point in our own Anthropocene-responsive common worlds research into children's relations with water, weather, and waste. We draw from these studies to take up the challenge posed in the call for papers to trouble resilience. And I think that we might have bitten off too much, but here we go. So work with me here. And we do this troubling not through deconstruction or critique, but rather we follow Donna Haraway's insistence that it is never about taking away, but rather it is always about adding to. And we add to by making new connections, producing new concepts, and forming new relations. And I guess that's what I'm hoping that I can, give today. But first, to get started, we need to figure out what kind of thing is resilience. Although it is recognized that resilience has proliferated across disciplines, I mean, it's pretty amazing. The resilient child, fire-resilient materials, resilient cities, resilient farms, it goes on and on and on. It actually is still unclear what exactly has multiplied. Across various fields, resilience has ambiguous meanings. No one really knows what resilience is or what it means. However, when we do find resilience at work in the world, and even though it still remains empty and ambiguous, what seems to matter are the futures it imagines, the presence it intervenes upon, and the tactics through which intervention is made. Therefore, an opening for speculation is possible within resilience. And this means that recalibrating resilience involves speculative imaginings. Now, recalibrating resilience requires a radically different approach from the current ways it encourages and focuses on independence and autonomy, rather than thinking and acting together with the more than human. So instead of pushing the child away from connecting with the world, we need to be building efforts at collaboration, connections, and relations. And our ethnographic work on children's relations with water, weather, and waste sheds lights on moments when world makings are happening together. And by taking a common worlds approach, we recognize that these world makings occur in multi-species encounters. And we see these world makings as moments when children are coming together with water, with weather, and with waste. And we argue that considering these encounters through situated, embodied, and relational ecologies might activate new ways of thinking about resilience, moving us towards what we're calling resilience as expanding relations. Maria Puy de la Bellacasa's feminist scholarship on care calls for a triptych of care that includes doings, affectivity, and ethics politics. And what we're doing is we're trying to build on this triptych for thinking resilience otherwise by considering resilience in terms of its doings, its affects, and its ethico-political connections. So we're not arguing against resilience, although sometimes I do want to argue against it. But instead, we believe that we must radically consider it differently. But to do this kind of work requires new questions. For example, the question we ask is not how children can be more resilient, but instead, what happens when we pay attention to the movements of resilience, and what happens when we expand this frame to include more than human water, weather, and waste movements? Paying attention to movement makes room for speculative imaginings and expanded relations to emerge. And with this radically different kind of framing in mind, we experiment by thinking through the doings of resilience, resilience affects, and ethico-political connections. So I'm going to briefly go over kind of how we're thinking through these three ways. The doings of resilience. Resilience, then, is not a one-way affair. Rather, it exists within an entangled web which includes humans and non-humans, biotic and abiotic. Resilience as a doing does not necessarily imply intentionality. Instead, it recognizes that resilience always exists within situated ecological terrains. What is of most interest to us is how resilience has been fostered by the array of interdependencies at work around it and with it. Considering the doings of resilience demands that we focus on movements. Now, this is really significant in the world of early childhood education because everything is about the child. So to make this shift is huge, huge. That's what a lot of us are trying to do, and it's huge. So considering the doings, we need to focus on movements, and we are interested in what emerges when we pay attention to more than human water, waste, and weather movements. And when we do, resilience becomes otherwise. For example, how does paying attention to weather movements of wind, moisture, and fluctuating temperatures mixing with paper makes room for new connections to be made with the child? Or how does listening to the sound of children's feet on changing floor surfaces as a collective group of footfalls produce rain sounds that activate new weather-child relations? How did these doings of resilience create new relations? And how might these new relations be worldings? Resilience affects. Thinking resilience otherwise requires us to notice and listen differently. Learning how to be affected is about being open to and attuned to the world. Affect moves us, and deep listening engages the senses by manifesting deep attention to materiality and embodiment in ways that rethink relationality, in ways that suggest a desire for tangible engagements with mundane transformations. And we argue that these engagements and transformations are already happening between water, weather, waste, and children. And a renewed resilience that is affect-focused will generate new connections that are needed during these times of climate crisis. And ethico-political connections. Resilience is not confined to humans. Nature cultures, as used by Haraway, reminds us of the inseparability of the natural and the cultural. Thus, the ethico-political fields in which we, myself, Jane, and Joe, navigate assumes children are not separate from nature, but part of it. Resilience for us, then, is guided what Maria de la Bellacasa calls permaculture ethics. And I quote, "Permaculture ethics is an attempt to decenter human ethical subjectivity by not considering humans as masters or even as protectors of, but as participants in the web of Earth's living beings." End of quote. So although we work within the human-centered field of early childhood education, we view child resilience as being inextricably part of an ever-moving and entangled web in which the human is but one player. Our ethico-political resilience orientations are not one, but many. And within these ethico-political orientations, we pay attention to nature culture's ongoingness by, quote, "cultivating ongoing communal practices over time, acting within a community of human and non-human beings that foster a certain durability of permanent renewal and fruitfulness versus the anti-ecological depletion of resources," end of quote. And that's Puig de la Bella Casa. Although we see resilience as a collective enterprise, this does not absolve us of our personal resilience responsibilities. In fact, collective resilience is intimately connected to our personal ways of being and doing. Resilience is simultaneously personal and collective. Resilience of one must always be considered within the context of the specific personal and collective common worlds. Furthermore, resilience cannot be ordered within a preordained hegemonic checklist of do's and don'ts. Such universalistic and normative approaches to resilience can never account for the ongoing movements in and through with which resilience exists. In Australia, as in other settler colonial societies, resilience measures are used with Aboriginal communities that reinforce binary and deficit thinking, which in turn can further marginalize these communities. And while we resist the notion of resilience as something that can be put into motion in advance, we advocate that speculatively aspiring for situated resiliences is vital to ongoing flourishing. So now I'd like to share with you how we are bringing together water, weather, and waste to think resilience otherwise. And as a feminist methodological experimentation, it sets out to interfere with the neoliberal resilience subject by activating new ways of being that exceed the human, non-human, and colonial divide found in this hollow yet loaded notion of resilience that is being used as the solution to a range of societal problems. So I've got two videos in here, and one of them, every time I go from a Mac to a PC, it turns sideways, so you're gonna have to use your imagination and turn sideways. But I think it fits with the idea of movement, so. Temporality is multiple. Old time, ancient time, now time, fast time. How do movement times complicate linear time? Tumbling time, swirling time, Noongar sand throwing time. A Noongar elder tells us, a river is a spirit home and we go there to visit our ancestors. We throw sand to let them smell us. When Noongar people visit a river or water body, we throw a handful of sand into the water. We use language to let the woggle know of our presence. Movements multiple. If you were there with us on this sunny morning in Djibouti season, walking with Durbal Yerrigan, you might have noticed movements multiple. You might have noticed movements multiple, not as more than one, but fragmented into many. The hydrodynamics of Durbal Yerrigan change with seasons and rainfall. A dominant feature of this estuarine hydrodynamics is a wedge of saline water that moves upstream from the ocean according to tidal and barometric forcings. At the same time, saline water is dense and tends to sit on the bottom of the river. If you had stayed with us that morning, you might have noticed that the tide was rhythmic and steady. You might have heard the softness of those ripples or felt them between your toes. Feathers arriving, but from where? Foamy sludge forming on the shoreline, catching feathers, moving feathers, and mixing up waters. salvaging moments, movements. Compartmentalizing, ordering, separating, dividing, what is worth salvaging? But what if salvaging movements aren't so simple? What if we consider who is deciding and how? Paper, weather, water, child. What if these resilient doings by paper, by weather, by water, by child have different consequences? Salvaging movements matter. Tumbling time, swirling time, again, Noongar sand throwing time. A Noongar elder tells us once again, a river is a spirit home, and we go there to visit our ancestors. When we visit a water, a river, or a water body, we throw a handful of sand into the water to let them smell us. Multiple bodies in movement. Unruly play with paper rain, discarded weather word shards entangle and twist. The art gallery weather changes with overlapping simultaneous embodiments of changing relations. Molly, black swans, circle, sway with river, shiver black feathers, and move in water that now runs seasonally between the brackish freshwater and salty conditions because of early settler interventions. Durbal Yerrigan crosses with Canning River amid the complex crisscross of roads over and between them. According to Noongar artist and elder Rod Gartlett, this urban landscape, all covered over with concrete, bricks, and bitumen, hides this country and its spirits from those who walk it now. This was not always the case. It's not gone. It just remains unseen. Our stories are alive in our country, in your country, in all of us, our stories. Stories are always moving. Listening is always moving. Standing under a torrent of rain, not rain, or rather the sound of rain and the interaction between graphite and paper, the pressing, the pause, the tiny gaps that make room for openings, for listening differently, for sensing more widely, to speculative imaginings, materials, unsettling senses. Swoosh! Margaret and I hear something coming from the sky, and I feel a swooping movement close to my shoulder. We turn to see what made that noise and movement. It must have been a bird, and I wonder if it is Jenark, which means Australian silver gull in Noongar language, coming for a visit. It is the most common gull of Australia, and they are found throughout the country, but particularly at or near coastal areas. So it's no surprise to see them on our walks. Jenark greets us every time we arrive to the river. Last week when we were there and when we were walking, she kept following us. Sometimes she stands beside us, watching what we are doing, and other times she lands in the water, her white, feathery body bobbing up and down, but still keeping an eye on us. Jenarks are special to the place where we walk. Dr. Noel Nanup, a Noongar elder, shares the story when the sea levels rose to show how significant Jenark are to the river. He says, Jenark care for the spirit children and the spirits of those who have passed on who are buried in the land that is being flooded. They convince Mumang, whale, and Kualana, dolphin, to bring spirits to rivers and beaches with freshwater springs and release the spirits so they can reach land. Jenark offered to fly out and sit on the ocean above where anyone had been buried to connect with their spirit, then come back to land, bathe in fresh sweet water, and release the spirit. Shadow time, light time, air time, damp time. How do these weathering times complicate Western understandings of the four seasons when Noongar seasons are six? Trash in transit. Neat and tidy, that's the way some people like it. Trash in transit, always moving, movements collected, movements to come. Future forecast, weathered paper, rain, strands of fractured word particles, tree particles, fingerprint, shredding teeth catchment, an accumulation of littered, threaded, tangled ownerships, splintered, separated, portioned, allocated. Resilience. Water time, weather time, waste time. How do these times complicate ethico-political time? So we present these slides as a strategy towards thinking resilience otherwise, and we are interested in how these images help us to pay attention to the agental interactions that work together to make our common worlds. We are not looking for a one-size-fits-all set of solutions. Rather, we are interested in the array of situated human, non-human arrangements that might put resiliencies and fragilities into motion. And finally, we believe that paying attention to movements makes room for speculative imaginings and expanded relations to emerge. With this nuanced framing, thinking through the doings of resilience, resilience affects, and ethico-political connections is a feminist experimentation that complicates and situates children, water, weather, and waste as more than just themselves, instead, in perpetual movements that are world-making. Thank you.